Golf Weekly on OTB Sports Radio, Ireland's first and only sports radio station.
Now you're very welcome along. It's this week's Golf Weekly. We have, as ever, Fionn Davenport in his house. We have Peter Lawrie in his house. We have Nathan Murphy with his fancy new tactics board in his house. And we are very happy to say we have Conor Moore with us in his apartment. Hello?
Apartment. I was going to say mansion, but I can't get away with that, can I?
How you doing? It's great to have you with us. You are most welcome. So tell us, well, I mean, we're going to be talking about your new show, obviously, but tell us what's going on, where the hell in the world you are, what have you been up to? The last time the Golf Weekly audience would have heard from you, we were at Powers Court Golf Club. You were holding court. We got a day of golf there. And then we were wedged together in a Lahinch pub, which is just the opposite of social distancing. Mm. And it was one of the great weeks and there was sunshine. And now here we are almost a year later. What's going on?
I know, yeah. I actually only thought of that before I came on. I was thinking that was one of the best weeks of my life. First time I ever played in a pro-am or anything, and the hinch in the weather, it was amazing. But yeah, no, I got over here now at the start of March, and we had a big plan. We were going to start off the show on Paddy's Day, and I came over, I was doing a bit of promo. The 17th of March actually was quite a big day because I'd actually, you know, the boys up in the Long Hall in New York, we were opening up a bar on Paddy's Day as well, and Corona happened, so the bar hasn't opened, and I've been locked in my apartment now for the last 5 weeks. But I have started a show.
So how are you doing it? You're in Florida, obviously. You're kind of next to Golf Channel premises.
Yeah, I'm about 30 minutes from the Golf Channel, but the Golf Channel is closed. There's a stay-at-home order here. Florida, we're kind of slow to do it, but the Golf Channel pretty much were fast enough acting, getting everybody out of the building. But then I'll be honest, I expected I was going home. I was, every time the phone rang, I was just telling everyone at home, I'll be home next week or so, I'll be home this week. And I was the only person that had that attitude. And I think maybe it's just the Irish in me. Like, I could just see nothing but obstacles ahead of me. But all the Americans over here were like, man, it's going to be great. No, no, it's even better now. There's no content. We've no competition. We've done nothing. So they were all delighted with it. Not delighted. They were really, really eager to get the show going. And yeah, I've just been recording it from my apartment. It's been a lot of work, like, and a lot of people have been asking me, how are you holding up over there and stuff? And do you know something? It's, I haven't had time to even think how I'm holding up, or I've just been working. And I actually always, I used to say, geez, I haven't worked a day in 4 years or 3 years. I think I probably said that on the pod last year. And now I'm like, I haven't had a day off in 4 weeks. You know, it's so different. It's like you're flat out, even just editing and recording the pieces, and then usually I just record stuff and it's fairly basic, and now it's I'll record something, send it over to them, and they're like, no, your head needs to be like here, your head is here, it needs to be here, the OTS, all this kind of stuff. So it's like, to do a monologue, which is 3 or 4 minutes, can take me 5 or 6 hours. The first day I did it, actually, I told the guys, they were like, we'll take 2 or 3 breaks throughout the day, and I was like, lads, this will be done in an hour and a half. It's about 11 o'clock. I know the lines. Don't worry. It'll be done in an hour and a half. We'll be out here. And now they're zooming into me. So they're on the laptops. So I'm sitting there, and I started at, I think, 12 o'clock that day. I turned the lights off at 11 o'clock that night. The studio lights.
Full on. So because I watched a bit of the show last night. So it's like almost a John Stewart, Trevor Noah style thing where you're kind of talking to camera and then going to either little pieces you've done or grabbing funny clips from the world of golf and beyond. So what are you kind of trying to do with it, or what's the plan, or is this what it was always meant to be, or has this changed with what's going on in the world? What's the story with it all?
The way it was meant to be, obviously we had a big studio and everything. When I went in the first day, I was blown away. Like, your name's on the wall, the lights are coming up, the big teleprompters, it's full on. And that probably would have been a bit daunting anyway for me to do, like, because I always say the hardest impression for me to do is my own, when I have to be me, you know, where you can't hide behind a character or whatever. So this was something for me that I was trying to like gear myself up for. So maybe this is kind of getting to dip my toe in the water a bit more, but it always was going to be a monologue, maybe an act, like an act two of something, even a story, or like it could be a good story or something funny, or it's something that happened that we recorded outside. And then act three will be a sketch. So it hasn't, the structure of it hasn't changed. It's just how we're doing it has changed. Obviously doing the monologue, we were going to have an audience as well. Like, so there was going to be maybe 20, 25 Golf Pass members. So, you know, these people are into golf. So it would have been a good audience for me to have. So you would have been doing it there and then. And even little things like, I'm obviously saying it to camera, down the barrel of my camera in the apartment. But the videos that are coming up that like you see in post, I don't get to see them as I'm doing it. And after it, then I'm kind of like the OG bits when I did it the first week, I just kept laughing at them every time I seen them. But then when I was doing it, I wasn't getting the same kind of vibe off it when I had to record the pieces. So at one stage, the boys actually were trying to play it through the Zoom to me. And OG, yo, thank you. And then I start laughing and deliver the line like. So there's just little things like that, but it will be, at least it's good practice, I suppose, to get into the, when we do get into the studio, although truth be told, there's going to be no audience this year. They're not going to bring anybody needlessly into the building that they don't have to. So that's the only difference in it. Not having an audience for the monologue is definitely a bit weird. When you're delivering jokes to nobody, like it's, I don't know, it's weird. It's just like having a really bad gig.
Is it a bit like, you know, when you hear, I can't remember if it was Liam Neeson or Ewan McGregor or whatever, they were talking about acting to blue screen for the Star Wars movies and going, seriously, it was just like the biggest mind melt of all time. Are you having to face the equivalent?
Yeah, it's so different to me just staring down the camera and saying these things. But in terms of recording the pieces, like last night's piece with the court, that was something I'd done before that I'd learned how to do when I was in Joe. And we got the studio kind of built up. So I was just here, and it's all angles and stuff like that. So the green screen stuff is like, for me, because they said to me, listen, do you think you can shoot this on your own? And I was like, oh yeah, sure, no problem at all. And I didn't at the time expect the level of detail that it was going to be, but it hasn't been that different for me in that regard. But the monologue, yes, is just, it's a bit, it is very American. You don't really see Irish shows like this, where you're like, so this one go. You know, it's even the boys. I have two writers and they're brilliant. But like the first couple of scripts, I'm like, I can't read that. I can't say it. Yo, bro, check yourself or something like that. I'm like, I can't. And you see, there's nothing to go on for me either because everything's done in character. So they can't exactly look at some stand-up I've done as myself. And mostly people say, like, I remember saying this on the pod last year, oh, were you the funny guy in the group? Not necessarily, but I was the storyteller of the group. So I can kind of tell a story and a yarn and stuff, but in terms of delivering jokes, so these boys are now, we're finding our feet. Like, you know, it is brilliant to have them. Like, it is such a help, even the way that, like, I was never brilliant at English. So even piecing the scripts together and stuff is on a different level, sort of. So that's a huge benefit to me.
I must say, there was a VT you did at Bay Hill, and just I won't give any spoilers to anyone who hasn't seen it, but like, basically you're asking just randomers five questions and they have to get the questions wrong. And like at the start, I'm going, like, this is way too simple. And I swear to you, I absolutely, because I was answering questions wrongly and I failed every single time. I have to say that made me laugh quite a lot. It was very, very good.
Where I got that game from? I got that game from the internet one day and it was like, it was a website called How to Pick Up Chicks. I'm not joking you, right? Times were really hard there at one stage. So I was looking, five questions, you ask them five questions and you just catch them out on the last two. Usually most people will get the first three wrong and you'll either get them on four or five and it is kind of a con job you do with them. And they wanted me to go do man in the street stuff and I was a bit like, I don't want to, like, I want the show to be something a bit different. I don't want to go out there and be like, so asking them questions about Tiger or something. I was like, it's all been done before. I was like, I have this game. It was a five questions game. We're like, where'd you get it? I was like, I used to do it to get free pints off people or whatever. I was like, it was actually a thing to pick up chicks when you get talking to them in the bar. So, that went down really well then as well. Yeah, everyone was, it was something I think you can keep playing then when you go to tournaments, if we ever get back to that stage.
It's brilliant. Yeah.
How did the show come about then? Because obviously look, things have been going incredibly well over the last couple of years. Was this an idea you had that you were bringing to Golf Channel and just waiting for the right person to come along, or did they have the concept in mind and were just waiting for the right presenter?
They had the concept in mind to me last year. And when the first thing I said to them, I was like, that'll only work if you have a live audience. I was like, because they were saying about John Oliver and Trevor Noah, that kind of vibe. And I was like, those guys are telling jokes to people. Again, I was being really Irish about it, like seeing all the problems ahead or whatever. And they were like, nah, this is going to be great. And then just over the course of a couple of months before Christmas, then they said to me, would you be interested? And I was like, well, I'll have a look at it after Christmas. And we did. And to be fair, like they've been brilliant so far, like, you know, and again, having them kind of people around you that are like just so eager to get it done. And yeah, how it came about, it was definitely their idea. It wasn't mine anyway. So it's good for me as well. Like I say, being a, like presenting the apparently the president of the Golf Channel, when he seen the first episode, he said this kid could be the next Joe Malloy. So
that's they're big shoes to fill.
You'll be interviewing the CEO of Shell at the end of the Shell Houston Open, thanking them for all they've done for the world and for the environment in no time at all.
There is such a rich tradition, though, of the monologue and, you know, the writer, you'd be people writing the jokes for Jimmy Fallon or Jay Leno or all these guys going back. Like, if the world gets back to normal, would you see yourself going around to comedy clubs and trying to get good, really good at that and, you know, get your material and get writers and almost become not a stand-up comedian? But, you like, the American talk show host is so multi-talented that they almost need to be part stand-up comedian as well.
Oh, completely. And they all are. They all have that background. And I've kind of been fast-forwarded into that. And there was actually an improv club that I was going to go to the week we were told we weren't stay at home, but everyone was kind of like, right, it's not healthy to go out there. So I actually intended on doing improv classes and some stand-up comedy here in Orlando because I kind of thought, I'll get away with it here. Unless you're a golfer, no one's going to recognize me out there. So I was like, I can go up and bomb and die up there and everything, and it'll be fine. So I did. I planned on doing that. And on top of that, like, I planned even in Ireland last year, kind of just things get kind of busy. And then you can't try to be jack of all trades. But it is something that I've thought of, just getting up there. Like, Tommy Tiernan doesn't tell jokes. He tells stories.
Yeah.
And it's just, he's so good at layering a story and delivering the punchline or whatever the arc of the story, everything. He's just got it mastered. He's a genius. So, like, anytime I've tried, like, at the end of the day, I wasn't an impersonator 4 years ago. And now I'm seen as this big impersonator, like, you know. So to me, like, it's just another skill that you could, like, if you worked hard enough at it, like, I'm sure you could get really good at it. But I definitely think I need to do things like that and get uncomfortable. Even the last 2 weeks for me have been brilliant because I've done something every day. I've done a podcast. I've been on TV here 2 or 3 times. And now it's all on Zoom, but I used to kind of like pick and choose these and go, oh, I'll just do that one and I'll do that one and I'll do, you know, just, I don't want to be oversaturating things. And that, you still don't want to do that, but like, you have to get used to just being you and just going up and just feeling no pressure like that. Like, you do this every day instead of like, all right, now make sure you nail this. Definitely there's a lot to work on, like, for me over the next couple of months. It's kind of hard at the minute with the way things are, even doing the monologue. The hard part of the monologue at the minute is having no, like, golf. Like, you need golf. But the only thing about, like, I suppose Golf Central Morning driving these shows, they've been pushed back, postponed. I think they're back in the air this week. But my thing is make-believe. So they're like, listen, you can just make it up in your head. But my strategy for the last 3 years of making videos was always being relevant, funny, and being timed well. And now relevant and timed are kind of gone out the window. You know, you're not catching a trend or whatever. Even like the court case last night is about Tiger and his caddy where he shoved the guy. But you definitely have to be inside golf to know even that story. While some stories, every sports star or every sports fan will know those stories. So you're kind of lacking that at the minute. So we just have to get creative.
When you're out.
Sorry, Phil.
Sorry, Peter. Go on.
What about David Fegarty? Has he reached out to you at all, or have you been speaking to him?
I haven't actually reached out to him this year. I met him last year. I think it was the Open or something last year. It was the Players. Great fella, like, you know, and I must actually give him a shout, like, because he's, as I was saying to the writers over here, I was like, when you were thinking about writing for me, maybe think about what you'd write for Fegarty.
Yeah.
Because, like, being Irish, like I was saying, it's very hard for me to come on and go, hey, you know, what a week in golf it is today, or, you know, that kind of way. So I'm like, we're definitely more subdued. I would say maybe it's the weather or something. We're just a little bit more depressed over here. But I was like, I find it hard to come on with all that that vibe. Now, maybe it's something I'll get good at and develop as well. But I think I have to get on to Fegarty maybe and ask him how he does it. I'd be very interested to hear how he does it.
And it is kind of relevant to that I wanted to ask you. So, like, obviously the last 3 years have just been, like, runaway success for you. And this is, despite the stutter step of this crisis, this is a major, major step for you. Like, are you, I mean, do you have like a plan, like looking ahead for the next 3 years, and you've kind of got a fixed plan that this is where you want to be this time next year, the year after that, or are you kind of taking stuff as it comes?
I literally take it as it comes. I remember I used to do plans and I used to, and then you'd write down goals or something, but like so much in my game is uncontrollable. All I can kind of control is getting better at maybe doing the presenting, getting better at impressions and stuff like that. Like I didn't set out in 2018 like, you know, and say, I want to do an ad with Tiger Woods. You know, these things just happen. And kind of the harder you work, you know, that old saying, I don't know, it was Arnold or Gary Player, whatever that saying about the harder you work, the luckier you get. So for me, I never really think of too far down the line because you never know. The only thing is I kind of think if you add enough strings to your bow, you'll never be out of work. You'll always have something to do. And even if it ends up being a presenter of something or anything back in Ireland, you just never know. So for me, I just kind of focus on like, not to sound like a soccer player here, you know, it's the next game, but the only focus I have now is just making sure next week's show is good. Mm. And that's pretty much all I think about. And then if that happens, and also like, because the coronavirus gives you, it is a stuttering step in a sense, but it's also like an opportunity for me. I'm doing a lot of soccer stuff because no one knows. The golf could get canceled for the rest of the year. Like they could bring people back out. Everyone gets really sick again or whatever. And it spikes and they'll say, right, we can't do it until there's a vaccine. So there's no guarantee the show will last the full 20 weeks it's supposed to last. And I've been told that, like, and it, anything could happen, whether it's financial or whatever. So, like, I'm using this time as well to, like, brush up on the soccer stuff. Because I do about 2 soccer videos a year, but they tend to go viral anytime I do them. I'm like, I should be doing more of them as well. So just enough, if you've enough kind of strings to your bow and then you've enough games you're involved in, whether I do the GAA, the horse race, and you'll never be out of work. So I kind of take it like that, just working myself all the time and these opportunities then just kind of come if you're doing your own job well.
You've obviously got a good sense over the last couple of years of the American sense of humor, but a show like this is different. It's not just impersonations. It is that 3-4 minute monologue at the top, which when you look at the regular American talk shows, like it can be quite cutting at times, and it's probably aimed towards politicians and they have a freedom to chop them down at the knees. Like golf is a pretty small market. Like, have you had to think a lot about how you get that balance of being able to rip the piss out of the golfing community, but it is just the golfing community in a small community that you're playing to?
Do you know what? It's actually a great question because it was one of the first things I told the writers when I seen some of the stuff come back to me. I was like, you know, there are easy targets in the game and we can like take the mick out of a few players or whatever, but in a very, very playful way. I was like, golfers are universally popular. Like when you're on the 18th green of any major championship or any tournament, the guy who's in the lead is getting a massive clap and he's getting cheered on. It's not a soccer game, you know, where you're not happy with the result. Everyone, unless Tiger loses on the last or something, everyone's pretty happy for whoever wins. So golfers are universally popular. So by me like calling out a golfer or insulting him or something like that, it's just not going to wash. And on top of that, like any of the golfers I've met, you know, have always been really sound to me and really nice as well. Like, so I don't have a gripe with any golfer or anything. And I always say when I'm doing the comedy, whether it's in the GA or whether it's in soccer, whatever, I'd like to think that when I do it, we're all laughing, I'm laughing, but also Poulter's laughing or Gary Player's laughing, and that they're all laughing at it, that it's not cutting in any way. The one guy.
I think that's one of the best things about it is that they're all sort of in on it as well. And I don't know if, you know, by week 7, if you were really like hammering on Patrick Reed, I think people would start to feel like, does he really deserve this the way Donald Trump should be getting it from Jimmy Fallon?
Yeah. And on top of that, who am I to be insulting them?
Yeah.
You know, well, not like I'm a brilliant golfer or anything, you know, that I won all these majors and I'm now insulting these guys. Like I have to, and there's not even a line you have to tread. You don't even need to go near it. But like, you know, even like last year, I wouldn't have touched the whole Kuchar thing because it was really sensitive subject. But then I seen everyone's kind of joke, even Phil started joking about it. So I touched on it in the first episode on Zoom. He wouldn't pay the $9.99 for Netflix. It's just a gentle jab, you know, this kind of thing. And I kind of just try and, I've told the boys that when they're writing it, because they are, the guys I'm with like are from that background as well. And they're all, like we're all in agreement as well, like that it's, you just have to keep it in some way. Just think that they'd enjoy it. It's like when I did a gig in Pebble Beach a couple of weeks ago, and the one guy I probably go a bit hard on, but he's twice been asked about, is DJ. You know, where I'm like, oh man, you know, it's like, oh, where am I, man? You know, so when I'm doing him, I'm a bit like, did I go too hard on DJ there? Yeah. And but then he was asked about, like, what do you think? Yeah, man, I think it's pretty fun. You know. But I was doing a gig in Pebble Beach a couple of weeks ago, and I was middle of doing DJ. And I was like, the guy asked me a question. I'm like, that's a really good question, man. Can you repeat the question, please? I start doing them. And then everybody in the middle of it, everyone's laughing at it. And he's one of my most popular ones at Live Gig. But then they're hysterically laughing at it. They're like, they're just going mad laughing at it. And I'm kind of going, what's happening here? And everyone's not looking at me. They're looking out the window. It's a DJ right at the window talking to somebody, right? And I'm taking the complete mick out of them. And I just looked at the crowd and I was like, you know, I just saw I just saw myself out there, man. So I'm going to stop. So I just completely stopped. But yeah, like I said, like once, I think you just have to toe the line with them. And but I think I do that in most games. But soccer is different, kind of where you can take this, you can slag off teams, but it's a whole collective. You're not aiming for somebody. Golf is individual. So
who are your popular then? You just, it's interesting you mentioned DJ goes down well live. Who do you know you need an audience to wake up? Who are your go-to three or four?
I always kick it off with Porter. Okay. I always kick it off the same line as well. I kick it off and say, well, I have to say it's an honor for you people to have me here today. And that's the first line. You had to laugh.
Home run. We're good.
Yeah. And then something like this. It's like being a Ryder Cup captain. Porter, you're out first. So he goes out because he can't. Because I remember doing my first couple of gigs and I would have started off with the weaker ones thinking, I leave the best for last. But you have lost the crowd then halfway through. And by the time you get to the good ones, they're a bit like, nah, this fella's shit. You know, so I start off with Porter. Gary Player is becoming massively popular. Huge. And he's actually featured twice, like in the first two episodes. And I didn't realize I did this until I did a Sky Sports interview on Sky Sports News last week. And they asked me about Gary Player. And they asked me about, do you think it should be postponed? And I was like, well, I tell you, it's a disgrace. I mean, players nowadays, they need everything. They need it all. They need it all. The football has to be right. The club has to be right. You know, I played through the swine flu, the bird flu. I played through the Spanish flu. I came third at the Open. And I was often been diagnosed with the man flu. I was like, I've had it all. So
I know what you're going to say. I know what you're going to say. That is Sherlock Nan.
I was just going to say, it's so close.
I didn't even realize I did it. And I was on Sky and I was like, all the boys are texting me going, genius, I see what you've done there. Because everyone says to me, I always come out with this usual, it's always something I'll say at home. I'd be like, if Sherlock Nan was famous in America, sure, I'd have it made, or I'd be a millionaire. You'd be stuff like this. And then they're like, you've got it. You've got Sherlock. You made Sherlock Nan into Gary Player. But then I was thinking, how did I not think of that? Because they're the same in a sense. They're the old timers. They're tough. You know, they look at these young fellas nowadays and they're too soft.
Yeah.
And like, they're very vocal and opinionated. And I'm like, boom.
Boom.
I might put the hat on him and all.
Player must be a hard one to get that balance in terms of, because in many ways he is beyond parody. So, and the only thing then is that it somehow ends up in quite insulting to a beloved
I know, yeah.
The golfing community.
I had one guy in Ireland that, like, he's an older guy in my club that I really respect and really likes all my stuff. And he wrote to me after the Gary Player last year. He says, and he always loves my stuff, but he did say, be careful there, you know, going after someone so respected in the game. But Gary Player actually retweeted out one or two of the videos so far. So okay. But he is nearly beyond parody because he's so funny. And some of the stuff he comes out with, and he's staring at a guy like that, you know, and he goes, I tell you now. Absolutely. Like, he was asked a question one day on an interview, and the way he just talks about something else, or he talks about food or something, and he switches it all up, and then it's about him. And you're just like, this is
have you seen the video he did with O'Driscoll a couple of years back? Was it a HSBC gig?
Yeah.
Over in Abu Dhabi? Oh, it is 5 glorious minutes of television. Where I think Gary, there's a lot of pounding of the chest in front of O'Driscoll.
Yeah, that's what I did. That's what I did last year with the whole. When I did him first, I went, I tell these players nowadays, I tell you, McIlroy thinks he's good in the gym. I tell you, look at me, look at that, hit that, hit that. Like, put himself, and then it was like, whoa! He was after breaking his rib. Like, oh,
Connor, just in terms of, it always seems to me from the outside that golf, and I don't mean golfers, but that golf has long had a humor deficit. Like, the face of golf is always presented as being largely kind of just takes itself incredibly seriously. It has no sense of playfulness. David Faraday is a massive I think an exemption to that rule. And I'm not saying, I'm sure there are tons of golfers that are very funny in their private, you know, like when you meet them, but like, so someone like you comes along, do you feel that like golf is dying for someone to bring, like, I don't know, levity, something, some just like comic value to the whole sport?
Yeah, my thinking behind it, when I started doing the Conor Sketches thing, like I say, it was all very random when I started off. My first video was actually an off-the-ball thing. I had Woolly Parkinson interviewing people. But I remember thinking, like, no one's doing Woolly. No one's really doing Gerlach Nan and these players. So I went in doing something because I didn't want to... You go in doing the politicians then, oh, is he the next Mario? Is he better than Mario? Is Mario better than him or Oliver or whoever? And I was like, I just want to go in and I'm going to do my own thing. And then with the soccer, I did Klopp and Pep and a few of these other guys. And that got me a job in Joe because Klopp was becoming a real star. And then it was around that time my dad became the captain of Mullingar. I was down there a bit drinking with people. And I was like, golf clubs are like, they're like pubs when you're in them. Bunch of fellas in there and even the women and everything. They're all just mad for the crack. And they're all telling stories and yarns. And they really loved that kind of social aspect of the game. And I remember thinking, well, no one's doing golf comedy at all. Like, never mind characters. Like, it's not been done whatsoever. And then, like I was saying about timing it, like, I had that thought around Christmas time and I was like, right, I'm going to do a video. And the time to put it out then is on the Monday of the Masters when every, because it's like doing the stuff now. Your numbers aren't going to be great now, right now, because it's only the real golf fans that want to consume golf content right now. You have to be really into the game. But if you're going to a major championship week, everybody's watching it. I was one of those people. Only watched golf 4 or 5 times a year, but was really interested when the majors came around just as a sports fan. So, yeah, it's all about just, for me, yeah, it was all about like just going somewhere where and people always say that thing about them being stuffy as well, which I just never got. I never got that from golf clubs. Now, I know people, there's maybe an elitism thing in golf clubs, but in terms of when you're down there, it's all a bit of crack, it's a bit of a laugh, drinking pints. And I thought it could be easy, and it turned out like it was. Like as soon as I did the first video, I was flown to Orlando.
Yeah. in fairness to you, it's not like you've come on here and said I want 10 mentions on my show or anything. But I'm just conscious for people who maybe are kind of going, "What are you talking about here? What's this show?" This is on Golf Channel, but you can get it on the Golf Pass as well. Like, what's the best way for people to check it out, or what? Like you were saying, 20 weeks is the run.
Yeah, well, hopefully now we're doing 8 weeks and we'll see what, like, we have to take stock and see are we, you know, is there a point to doing it if there's no golf at all this year? But it's running for 20 weeks, the Conor Moore Show. The first 2 episodes are free. It's on Golf Pass, which I describe as the Netflix for golfers. You can get it for $5 a month for video only, which that incorporates my stuff. But then $10 a month gets you, like, you know, discounts, tee times, Rory McIlroy tips, and so much more. Yeah. So
there's your promo. And is it on Golf Channel as well?
Bits of it will be on, like pulled onto the Golf Channel, onto the social media, and onto TV. You'll see it been promoted on TV. But there is, I suppose, to go back to Fionn's point about the goal, if I do a good show every week and this becomes good, this could be on TV. And that, I suppose, that's the goal.
Right.
But it's all about focusing on making it good now. And if like that happens, brilliant. Again, it's something I can't control. It's up to them. But that hopefully, like, it'd be brilliant to see it on TV. The Golf Channel are also moving to New York. So that for me is just music to my ears because I love New York. I like it down here, but it's, you know, I'll certainly come down here when I'm 65 and retire. Yeah. For now, I'd rather go back up to New York to all the lads.
Your liver won't survive that move.
I know. I've got a girlfriend now and everything totally calmed down from last year. It's a new week.
You got to wait for it. I can see it now in 2-3 years' time. Live from New York, it's Conor Moore.
hopefully, yeah. That's the plan. I'll tell everyone now. I formulated a plan with Fionn Davenport on the Off the Ball podcast.
I had a question and it's gone. Sorry.
I just realized I've muted myself. I was the just entire time. I made like 4 brilliant jokes.
I saw your.
I just nailed it.
Your mouth was moving furiously, and we were getting.
And I was laughing to myself. I was laughing to myself, which makes it even worse.
It's not. I froze. I was looking at my wife. I was like,
"That's something you can bring into your next show." What I was going to say, my hilarious joke was about the Golf Channel looking for new talent and whether a particularly hard-edged, straight-to-the-point pundit from Ireland could maybe get a break over there. They need someone to tell it like it is, and Peter Lawrie is that man.
I think Lawrie could make it over. He might be a bit... Go on.
I got slagged recently. Joe described me as... Come on, Joe, what did you describe me as?
You're Larry David in Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yeah.
That's high praise, lads.
Yeah. And I don't know. Larry David's a genius. I tried to figure that one that evening. You know what I mean? Is this meant to be a slag or is this meant to be a, you know, a hard hitting get the fuck off my show? You know what I mean? But no, it wasn't that at all.
That's the edge that you bring. Peter. Why did you have to go there? Yeah.
Joe, what he's basically saying is that you definitely would be the type that would open a spike cafe.
I haven't seen much of Curb Your Enthusiasm.
You haven't?
Not enough to get that reference.
Yeah, Nathan texted me last night. He says, yeah, do feeling that important, Joe. I says, I've one rule in golf. I was like, I don't do two people, Jack Nicklaus and Peter Lawrie. Or sorry, Peter. Royalty.
Why wouldn't you do Jack Nicklaus?
No, actually, when I was with him, I was down here in Jupiter. He asked me to do a gig for him. He was doing the Jake Foundation a couple of weeks ago. And I remember telling the story last year on the show of when I met him first. And when I went home, he'd sent me the picture of me and him to my dad. And my brother was getting an award in New York. And they asked me then, I was going to New York for this award thing in February. And they asked me, would I go down to do a gig down at Jack's in the Bears Club? And I said, yeah, no problem. I said to the manager, Jack's manager, Scott, who's a great fella, I says, could I bring my dad down? I was like, remember I was telling you, like, he's a huge fan. This would be like just stuff of dreams for him. And he was like, sure. Yeah, we'll sort something out. You know, we'll put a table out for him or whatever, or a seat out for him. And then he texted me a few days before and he says, yeah, it's all organized. Your dad can sit with me. We're down at the back or whatever. Table, great table though. You know, we've got some cool fellas there. I was like, oh, excellent. And then I was in the hotel room or whatever, and we were literally about to leave. And Scott texts me and he says, does your dad mind if I switch his table again? And I text him. I says, honestly, he's like a child here. If you put him sitting outside at the window looking in, he'd be delighted. Don't worry about it. And he texts me. He said, well, I'm after switching his seat. Would he mind sitting with Jack and Barbara? And then I just said it to my father. I was like, I kind of said it like him. I kind of joked him. I was like, you're going to have to sit outside. Like, and like, he kind of was like, yeah, sure, you know. But he kind of knew I was half messing. I was like, I'm going to mess, you're sitting with Jack and Barbara. And it was this kind of moment, like, there wouldn't be much, like, emotion now between the two of us. And it was like, we go for the hook here or what? Like, and he was looking at me like, he was like, thanks. And then we just kind of walked away from each other. It was really awkward. And got there, like, and I remember when I was there, I was actually joking on the mic. Everyone thought I was going to do Jack. And I said, I it's just so bad. Because it's a very difficult one to do. And somebody's voice is like, with age and everything, your voice can become a certain way. So it's very hard for me to try and get to there, that kind of vocal range. So I said it, and Jack said to me, he says, oh, you got to do me, you know. And he started telling me a few things about him that was pretty cool, like, but I can't say, I won't divulge what he said to me, but he was kind of giving me license to give him a certain character. And I thought, like, and it's a funny sort of a vibe on it too. It's not like I don't have to be. I remember actually when I met him last year and I was listening to your pod after it, and you were talking about Mr. and Mrs. Nicklaus and how you call them that. And then I was like, literally, I was in the back of the car and I was like, oh my God, there I was meeting him going, how are you, Jack? Barbara, how are things? That must have been, you know, they were brilliant. Like, they really were. And it's like, they're so like, and Barbara as well, she's just such a lady and stuff. Like, they just couldn't have been any nicer to us. And my father, like, it was just something that he'd take to the grave with him, you know. We got a great picture as well, and Jack signed a few things for him, players cards and stuff like that. So it was really class.
No, it's genuine. Like, him sending the photo on the story you told us last year was incredible. Even having your dad sit beside him, it's just the most unbelievable touch of class. It's incredible.
Yeah, and I find in golf, there is that class about people. And I'm very fortunate to fall into this game of all games that I've been in. Like, I don't know, maybe even it's an Irish thing, but like, when I'm over here, I find like people are inviting you everywhere. And I meet the golfers, and even doing a thing with Ricky, and Ricky was like, when you come out to Jupiter, we play golf, or like, even getting to know Shane, there's a real class to them, you know. And it's something that I definitely, it's amazing. Whether, like, even doing the thing with Rory there at Christmas and stuff, like I was watching Tiger a couple of months ago, and I was thinking, if someone told me 10 years ago, I remember, or watching that putt, I remember watching that putt drop in with the Nike ball at the Masters in 2006, and I was like, if someone told me, like, in 15 years you're going to be mad with that fella, I'd be like, what am I going to do? Like, what's in store for me in the future? You know, it's
Somebody told Tiger that though 15 years ago, he wouldn't have believed it either. Purely because he was that kind of character 15 years ago. He's kind of a he hit the bottom and then came back up again. He came back a much nicer fella, or seemed to, anyway.
Yeah, no, again, I didn't meet him before I did the ad with him or anything, but even the people, like, that day on the shoot, like, I was saying, you know, he's so nice and stuff. They were like, yeah, he's so easy to work with. And he was really pro as well. You know, obviously, I was saying I was doing my lines and everything the night before, making sure it was all right. It was just a board put in front of him. He just, there was no stuttering or stammering. I thought he'd be very nervous meeting me, but obviously he wasn't. But, yeah, he was just, I suppose they're used to doing that as well. Like he would have done so much of that over the years, like with Nike and everything else. But
he's a pretty good actor, though.
I'm just curious. Did your dad say anything of hanging out with Jack and Barbara? Like, were they talking to him? Did he enjoy himself? Did he get on well with them?
I did. Yeah, they were like, you know, he was sitting to the right of me, and Jack and Barbara were there, and it was a big night. Like, they were raising money, and there was auctions going on and stuff. You know. Like, it was funny, even when you're sitting there, like, and you're looking at all the knives and forks, it's like that scene in the Titanic. You're like, which one do I start off with here? You know, it's like, I was looking at him, he was as confused as I was, but they couldn't have been any nicer. They really couldn't, like, and they really made the two of us feel like 10 feet tall walking in there and stuff. And it was a class night. It's something now, it's one of people ask me, what's the best part of your job? And I'm like, it's usually like, even the Tiger thing, when I asked Bridgestone, can I bring my manager and my agent? And they were like, sure. And I brought my cousin and my brother, because I was like, this is like something you got to bring people along with, like, you know, to see or whatever, you know. So that's probably the best part of my job, is doing stuff like that, where you get to bring somebody around and they're like, wow, you know.
Yeah. Sorry, Fionn. Go on.
No. It's kind of past it. But I was just going to say about Tiger, is one of the things that always strikes me is that he's a really good actor. Like, all the ads, he doesn't look like he's saying a line. He always seems really – and. You know, I'm not going to name names. We can't say that about a lot of golfers. There's some who feel a little more wooden.
No, that's true. Yeah, and I like he definitely was the most loose of all the guys I've done anything with. Very just, and then it's like hustle line, and then he's like, all right, you know, play with the Turbi RX, and he's just looking at me and stuff. And he was, I would say, my acting in it wasn't great. People often say to me, like, sure, you're an actor and stuff. I'm like, it's a bit of an insult to call me an actor. I get into character all right. But when I get to, like, even doing the thing with Rory there at Christmas, usually I'm not giving my lines to anybody but me. So timing isn't an issue. Timing is done in the edit. So you can hold off. So I give myself a bit of slack at the start and at the end. And then I hit the line. So I can time that, like, and then on the computer, I can go, right, that's delivered well, boom. But when you're doing an ad, you have to act, and you have to, like, your timing, everything. You have to think of so many different things. And I suppose I'm doing a lot more of that. Even the gimme sketch last night, although I wasn't really, it was more on the other guy. But
who is the other guy, by the way?
He's just some actor. He was a theater guy that one of the guys the Golf Channel knew, and he literally was called the night before. Do you want to do this? And he rocked in, and we just let him off.
He was very convincing, because I wanted to smack him with a putter at the end of it.
Oh, yeah, because it was something I said in the office, because I was playing with all these people when I came over here, and I was like, what's the crack with all this gimmies and stuff? And I'd be on that, like, people would give me a gimme, and I'd finish the hole out. I'd be like, thanks, and I'd still put it. I'll do it a little bit quicker, like, I'll speed up, but I like to finish the hole out. In Ireland, like, when I'm playing golf with people, we always finish it out. Like, I never go, oh, that's yours. Like, because I always want to know that I par that hole or not, you know? Or bogeys, in my case. But
Jesus, that's Joe Malloy all over. That's 100% Joe Malloy.
I'm gonna finish. I'll give someone a gimme, but even if I get a gimme, I'm like, thanks, and then I finish.
Yeah, I just like to have the ball in the hole. As I was saying last night, it's like, you know, in soccer, if you got a penalty and your man says, here, give me that, it's grand. You'll probably put it in anyway. Be a bit sick, like, you want to put it in the net.
Who's next for the Conor Moore treatment then? Because you're obviously doing quite a bit of Bryson now, but, like, when you look at the American players that are coming through, I don't know, do you do Koepka much? Like, are there personalities coming through that you're seeing on the circuit who would work well for your show?
Big time. And Koepka's brilliant as well, because he just, like, he's the kind of new age golfer where he's just saying what's on his mind. Rory does, in a way, too, but Koepka's kind of going next level with it, like, where even when he was saying about Patrick Reed and stuff, he's, like, calling people out.
Yeah.
And he is. And then I have a sketch with him done. It was recorded. It was supposed to be probably the first sketch of the show, but it's done outdoors. And it's me in the driving range being confronted by all the players going, we're sick of this. So they're all standing pretty much in line and I'm taking a few shots. And Koepke comes in at the end and his question is, why don't you do me? But he's annoyed, you know, where you're doing all the rest of these losers. So,
do you know, Connor, these lads have a love affair with Jordan Spieth. Is he certainly in your repertoire?
I did him for the Open last year, and I remember nailing Jordan, which is the only character this ever happened to me. I got Jordan in a sketch one day, and then I kind of lost him. I was like, yeah, well, very excited to play, and, you know, it's a really good tournament, and you can hear him there, he's there, yeah. But he's just not kind of perfect yet, but he definitely is there. Again, and not to insult anybody, you're always trying to be relevant as well, and he's played really poorly over the last year. So, like, if I start going in on him and start talking about how poorly he plays or certain things like that, I try to stay away from that. Like, just it's better to knock the guys. Yeah, it's better to knock the guys nearly or take the mick out of guys that are doing well. It's like Poulter. Like, it doesn't matter what Poulter does. I remember doing at the Open last year, 2 years ago. I did a video of Poulter talking to David Fegherty. Fegherty was the psychologist. He was like, so hurry in, you know. And Poulter was like, you know, they're trying to poop to prove the coast is out. Hey, you know, stop me from breaking Jack's record. And I was giving it all this kind of stuff in this room. And he's crying away to, but it was supposed to go published on the Friday of the Open. And then Poulter missed the cut. So this is pre-recorded. So it wasn't like I jumped on it straight away. But to Poulter, I'm thinking, he's going to think he's after missing the cut. And this little bollocks is after coming doing this now. And I ended up asking the Golf Channel not to put it out. And they said, no, it's fine or whatever. And then my phone, it was out about an hour. It wasn't doing great numbers. Like, it wasn't doing great. I was kind of finding my feet at the time. And then this quote tweet, Ian Poulter. And I went into it and he goes, you know, and it was the first time I think he ever tweeted anything out about me. And he goes, you know, I've had a shit day today. I look at my phone, I see this, and it's hilarious. Top man on of sketches. Even when I did the gig in the house with him a couple of weeks ago, like as soon as I walked in, he is like just such, he's like the most normalist of them all. All right, mate, love it. And then I was kind of saying to him, just, I hope you don't like, obviously I'm taking a mic and everything else, like it's all whatever. And he was like, mate, go as hard as you want. I don't care. You know, you got to do. And then.
That's great.
He's a great fella. He actually is a great fella. Like, he's very, very charitable and everything else. And when I was over at his house, like, him and the family couldn't have been nicer.
Yeah. Do you like living in the States? Could you see yourself being there full time?
Only if things got so good that I couldn't move home. At the minute, like even last year, I lived in New York for 6 months. I came home around that time. I did the pod with Chile, like, and I was happy to be home. I am a home bird. And then even the sports at home, when I got over here, like, and GA Go gave me the password and stuff, I was delighted. I was waking up on a Sunday morning and I was watching the Gaelic or whatever, you know, the hurling. And you're just, you still, you know, you're listening to the podcasts or the radio, even off the ball AM or whatever. And then now it isn't really like that. You're missing all that. But I'd like to think it'd be great if I could do this and live here for 6 months and live at home for 6 months. That'd be the dream, but that might not happen. It might not be feasible. But at the minute, that is what I'm doing. And when this ends, I will go home.
Are you? You must feel fairly optimistic that Florida will open up, maybe quicker, perhaps, than other places. I mean, Governor DeSantis, he decided that professional wrestling was key essential work, and you know, he's interpreted the lockdown in the loosest way possible. So. Do you see golf opening up, and particularly in a place like Florida, which is, you know, 60% about golf?
Did you watch my monologue this week that's not out till next week?
Oh, no, go on.
I've scripted some of this. I have him coming in because he's on, like, people are asking about coronavirus and he's talking about Tiger and Phil getting this game going and he has wrestling down as an essential sport. So I'm kind of actually talking about that this week. I think they'll open up golf courses. It's so weird watching. When I came over here first, I was really enjoying watching the news. I think Lowry spoke about this in the pod a couple of weeks ago. Like, you turn on one station and you're getting one thing. You turn on another station and you're getting another. So you turn on Fox and it's like, you know, Donald Trump is nearly, you know, he's got the cure. You know, he created himself there last night. What a guy. You turn on CNN and it's like Donald Trump created coronavirus, you know, to take out all the liberals. And it's just, now I know I'm exaggerating, but it's two completely different ends of the spectrum. And it was so funny. I was coming home every evening and Trump was like, you know, we've got it under control. It's so under control. I mean, nobody knows viruses more than me. I mean, it's, you know, it's very, you know, nearly to zero. And all of a sudden I came home one evening and I turned on the television and there he was with his head and he was like, this is not under control. I was like, but I was enjoying watching the news there for a while and now I've turned it off. Do I think, golf will open up down here? There's no way you're going to put fans, I think, this year. Like even little things like the bar in New York, this year you'd write it off. I just don't even think it should open up. I don't think putting people in crowds is gonna work. Like the masks are going to be given to people to go to work.
Yeah.
And you're going to be social distancing from work. And then if people can work from home, they're going to work from home. And it's going to be like that until there's a vaccine. So again, you don't know in America, like I say, even with my show, they can be so optimistic and positive. They'll say, let's do it. But then, like with the Spanish flu 100 years ago, the second spike was the worst. So if that happens, then that will shut everything down until it's all over. So it just all depends on what way it works. If they can do it responsibly and bring people back out, yeah. But I wouldn't be shocked if we don't see another golf tournament for the rest of the year or if it comes back and it's over within a couple of weeks.
Yeah, they have the 11th of June penciled in for Texas, and they say they're very confident they're going to do that. They've ordered a million tests. I mean, I'm not even sure about the ethics of ordering a million tests when there's probably a shortage of tests around other parts of the world, but they have a million tests ready to go. They're planning on doing it the 11th of June, the PGA Tour, that is. But as you said, I don't think there'll be a crowd there. Ryder Cup will probably be cancelled for that reason. Rory came out and said that, doesn't want to have a Ryder Cup without fans. Like, it's the second wave. The problem is nobody knows what the consequences of loosening any of the restrictions are. You know, we and then there's a 2 or 3 week lag. You have to see, is that okay? And I think you mentioned it earlier on, like if a player tests positive on a Friday, that's tournament over.
Oh yeah, done. Now, although they do want rapid fire testing, which would, if let's just say, for instance, a player gets the coronavirus Friday, all right, everybody inside, we're testing everybody. And then if you're able to tell straight away, and that depends if you have access to a test like that, but that's the only way this can work. Because I think it's a massive financial risk to actually go ahead with these things with such uncertainty.
Yeah.
Because like golf isn't like soccer where you could maybe isolate, you could isolate those 20 Premier League teams and play games in different parts of England over the course of a couple of weeks. But you can't isolate golfers because they have to travel. Mm. Got to go through airports and they got to get into cars or Ubers, you know, and it's... Yeah, I'd love to see it come back, even just for my own show, because like you get the content and stuff. But I wouldn't harbour. This is me being Irish again. I don't harbour too much hope.
We're all doomed. That's your general. Jesus.
It's like the WhatsApp group I have at home with the lads, my friends back home. It's just doom and gloom. I'd be telling them, I'd have to mute it, like, because even if I put in something positive, they're like, nah, nah, nah. We're like this for a year.
Well, listen, we've taken up plenty of your time. I'm sure you are busy and lots to be doing. So thanks so much for doing this. Great to have you on again. Strange bloody circumstances. So you're on your own in that apartment, are you?
Yeah, effectively. Although, you know, thank God for social media. And that's why I've kind of done more of this than I've ever done in my life. I'm doing Instagram lives of people most days and whatever. It's you're just still tipping away. Like I say, I'm that busy now. I haven't really thought about being lonely.
And where to find chicks.com.
Yeah, well, I have to FaceTime the girlfriend, Nathan, so stop, don't say that.
She won't listen
to this, bud. It is great, though, to even just have that, like, you know, you have someone to talk to every day. We actually don't call each other anymore. We have to FaceTime.
I want to talk to someone now. I need to see them increasingly.
Yeah, and I kind of find... Well, me and her were laughing. We were like, even our mood is better when we talk, see each other, and you're kind of smiling instead of being on the phone. Because if like someone, you could be doing something, or if you're not listening, whatever. I don't know. It's just so much better doing it. And I was just saying, I was like, we probably do things like this for a long time after this.
Yeah. If someone FaceTimed me previously, I would have thought, what is this weirdo?
What a weirdo.
Now I'm like, why would you not FaceTime me?
My house all set up for FaceTime.
Right. Listen, we've taken up way too much of your time, but listen, thanks so much for doing it. Keep things going. So people should be checking out your show, supporting the show. Golf Pass is the place to get it. And best of luck with it, man. I'm sure it'll do very well.
Lads, thanks a million. Pleasure as always.
Golf Weekly on OTB Sports Radio, Ireland's first and only sports radio station.